Brishut, Rabbi Top, distinguished leaders, members of the community, Mr. Goldberger, and the wonderful words of Gabriella, I stand here today with the privilege of addressing you because of the Chappell's family's largesse. Over 1,000 students at Yeshiva University and thousands in communities around the country are being educated in the field of Holocaust studies because of the Chappell's vision for formal and informal programs focused on teaching the Shoah. I want to publicly thank David and fellow Chappell and the family for making what we do at Yeshiva University possible. However, I do not stand in front of you tonight just as a dean of Yeshiva University. I stand in front of you as a child of survivors. My father, he should continue to live and be well, was a hidden child. Like the patriarch Jacob, my Bubby and Zadie split up their children, my father and my aunt, with the hope that at least one would survive. My aunt, a blessed memory, black hair, a beautiful face, but let's just say with Jewish facial recognition, remained for a few years hidden in an attic, while my father at the time, all of 10 years old, blonde and blue eyes, went with his new family to church every Sunday. After the war, my grandparents were fortunate enough to find both of them. And then they spent time in DP camps and eventually made it to the United States. My father-in-law, whose yard site was yesterday, hid for 26 months in the forest. I remember him telling me how they would melt snow for water to drink, or how they would bury their food to keep it from rotting, being stolen, or totally spoiling. My mother-in-law, blessed memory, survived Auschwitz. And I remember before going on the March of the Living, she told me about her short daily march between Auschwitz and Birkenau. And when I walked on the March of the Living on Yom HaShoah, I realized that this was neither a short walk, and if I was cold, wearing a sweater and a jacket in the month of April, how did she do this every day, especially in the months of January and February, with little shoes and covered in rags? I reflected upon the fact that as I did the march, I was surrounded by soldiers from the Israeli Defense Force. And when she was forced to do her march, she was surrounded by a totally different type of soldier. Perla Mark, or Perry Mark as we call her in our family from this community, was my mother-in-law's best friend. And they went through much of the war together. And I stand here before you as a product of my parents and my mother-in-law's and father-in-law's tenacity and charisma. And the remarks that I would like to share with you tonight come from an idea of one of the great heroes of the Shoah, Rabbi Kolonimus Kalman Shapira, who is the rabbi of the Warsaw Ghetto. Rabbi Shapira, who at 30 years old, was appointed the rabbi of Piasecznia. His children were murdered in the bombings by Germany of Warsaw. And after the Nazis invaded Poland, Rabbi Shapira was sent to the Warsaw Ghetto. There in the Warsaw Ghetto, he worked with the resistance movement. He ran an underground synagogue, performed marriages, even maintained a mikvah. But perhaps most intriguing of all was that students and members of the Warsaw Ghetto would come to hear him every single week as he shared words of Torah on the Parsha. And perhaps even more intriguing was the fact that the Piasetzna Rebbe, Rebbe Shapira, felt and had the vision that he would write down every single week the Torah that he taught in the Warsaw Ghetto. So confident in the future of the Jewish people, that at the end of the Warsaw Ghetto, after the resistance, or during the resistance, he took all of his classes, all of his sermons, he put them in jars, buried them in Warsaw with a note that when they would be found, he asked that the person who would find them would print them. And so today, we have the privilege of reading from that sefer, that book, known as Eish Kodesh, the Holy Fires of Rebbe Shapira, the words that he communicated in the Warsaw Ghetto. His drasha on February 14, 1942, Parshat Mishpatim, Parshat Shkalim, begins with the following statement from the Talmud that I would like to share with you. Tanya, we learn in a comment in the Talmud, Amar Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says, Rabbi Yossi, one of the last students of Rabbi Akiva, Pamachat, there was one time, says Rabbi Yossi, that I was walking on the way, Benichnasi L'Chorba, and I entered one of the ruins of Jerusalem, Lehit Palel, to pray. Ba Eliyahu Zachor L'Tov. In that ruin, outside that ruin, I met Elijah the prophet. Ushamor li ala petach, and he watched over me as I prayed in the ruin. La'achar shesiyamti tfilati, after I finished my prayer, Amar li, Elijah the prophet came over to me and said, Shalom aleich Rebbe, peace be upon you, our teacher, Rebbe Yossi. Va'amar li, and the story continues, that Elijah asked Rabbi Yossi the following question, Ma kol shamat b'chor vazu? Did you hear any voices in this ruin, in this desolate in Jerusalem? Va'amarti lo, and Rabbi Yossi responded and said, yes, I heard a bat kol, a heavenly voice, that sounded like the coo of a yonah, like the coos of a dove. A very faint sound, the omeret. And it said that God said three times a day, that God said, Oy lebanim she'abanu l'seihim echavrafti. Woe is to my children that I exiled them. Ve'et beiti she'serafti. And my house that I destroyed. Ve'higilitem l'bein ha'umot. And I exiled the Jewish people amongst the nations. And Elijah the prophet turned to Rabbi Yossi and said, my son Rabbi Yossi, you should just know that b'chol yom v'yom, every single day in the ruins of Jerusalem, shalosh pa'amim, three times a day, does God echo these words in which he mourns for the Jewish people. Rabbi Shapira, after quoting that Talmud in the middle of Warsaw, where Rabbi Shapira says that it used to be that the greatest tragedy of the Jewish people was the destruction of the temple. But after witnessing the tragedies in Warsaw, said that the destruction of the temple was not nearly as great a tragedy as what happened to European Jews. Rabbi Shapira asked the following question. Why did the great Rebbe, Rabbi Yossi, the student of Rabbi Akiva, the person who is listed, Rabbi Yossi, over 300 times in the Talmud, why did Rabbi Yossi need a special space to hear the divine voice, to hear God acknowledge that he mourns for the pain of the Jewish people? And why is it that God's voice is so faintly heard in the ruin, when we're told in the prophet Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah, that God roars like a lion over the destruction of his temple and over the destruction of his people? And Rabbi Shapira, in the underground synagogue in Warsaw, explains the Talmud in the following way. He explains that every person, even the great Rabbi Yossi, even the student of the martyred Rabbi Rabbi Akiva, if they are to internalize the tragedy of our people, if they're going to make the challenges of our people part of their gestalt, part of their Weltanschauung, there needs to be a context. There needs to be a space that creates a rendezvous with the tragedies of the Jewish people. There needs to be an environment that allows for proper reflection of the tragedy, for the ability to internalize the tragedy. And Rabbi Yossi needed a location, the ruins of Jerusalem, to etch within his memory for all eternity the resonance of God's voice, that he mourns for his loss, for God's loss, and he mourns for the loss of his people. For Rabbi Yossi, that chosen space, that theater of context, was the ruins of Jerusalem. And Rabbi Shapira continues and says, the reason why the voice needs to be faint is because all too often, as was just said by Gabriella earlier, all too often what happens is we're not attentive to the tragedies. And when there is a faint voice, it requires us to listen more attentively. And so the question I'd like to leave us and reflect upon tonight is, Rabbi Yossi used the environment of the ruins of Jerusalem and the faint voice of God to be attentive to the tragedies. What about us? What about us? What about the children of survivors? What about the grandchildren of survivors? What about the members of the Jewish people? What about society at large? What is our chosen space? What is the chosen location that we have that empowers us and enables us to reflect upon the tragedy that has happened to the Jewish people, the Shoah? And I believe that we have created multiple contexts through which we are able to focus on the Shoah. One of those is a space, is a date, Yom HaShoah VaHagvurah, a day in which we pause and reflect on the devastation that happened to our people and the ability for us to resist and indeed to rebuild. The second space that we have been given, the second vessel that we have been given that enables us to reflect, are the holy vessels through which we, generations after the Shoah, are still able to hear the pain of our people. And that holy vessel are the survivors. The remnant of survivors who are here with us tonight, who still merit to see the light, who serve as a conduit to transmit the flame to us, the next generations. But in a society where, despite the visual record of ovens, the visual depiction of cattle trains, of gas chambers, of butchery, of storehouses, of hair, shoes, glasses, and luggage, in a society in which there is clearly documented newsreels and photographs, how can it be that there are university scholars who are reassessing the significance of the horrors perpetrated during the infamous era of Nazi Germany? How can it be that there are people who suggest that the whole notion of a Holocaust is a myth? How do we tell society that a highly cultured, highly educated people can perpetrate crimes against humanity when there is great prejudice? How can we communicate to our children that apathy is often as heinous a crime as blind obedience to a state's immoral acts? How do we make sure that we, the Jewish people, still hear the cry of the Shoah? How do we make sure that the Jewish college student on the secular campus, who has been fed the rhetoric of Edward Said, still believes that there's a Shoah and there's a context to be connected to? How do we make sure that our Torah community, in which there is a danger that the faint cry of that Rabbi Yossi heard seems to be transitioning into silence? How do we perpetuate the memories and the message of the Shoah? And I believe that there is no community better than Los Angeles that represents the answer to this question. Because what's unique about Los Angeles is the following. that all the early Jewish community institutions that were created to guarantee the eternality and the immortality of our people were built with one common denominator. They were built with the wisdom and the wealth of Holocaust survivors. It is Holocaust survivors that built this shul. It is Holocaust survivors that built Chelhevet and Hillel and Yula and Yavne and Maimonides. This community has a message that it needs to teach the rest of North American Jewish communities. That our response to never again, that our response to never again is again forever. That our response to never again is that we build again forever. That our response to never again is that we build and ensure the physical and the spiritual protection of the Jewish people, the physical and the spiritual protection of society. However, there is one message that we cannot lose as we communicate to the next generation. The pioneers of this community, they did not need a narrative to understand what they needed to do. They didn't need a mission statement. They didn't need a vision statement. My parents, my in-laws didn't need someone to tell them what they needed to do to make sure there was a next generation. They just did it. But we need to share not only what the survivors did to guarantee that Torah would grow, but we need to share with the next generation what their reasons for guaranteeing the future of the Jewish people was about. We can't just show them the buildings. We have to share with them the narrative. We have to share with them their courage, their charisma, their capacity, their clarity of vision. If the Shoah is to inform our children, if there is going to be people who attend these type of programs 10 years from now, then we can't just teach the Shoah one day a week, a year. We have to fulfill the mitzvah of v'higadot levincha, of teaching our children by sharing with them in a context the narratives that the survivors understood. We have to teach our children ma ha'avodah hazot lachem. What is the actions? What is the work that out of the ashes of Auschwitz, survivors were able to create Torah institutions all over Israel and all over the world and support and protect the physical needs of the Jewish people? We cannot take the narrative of the generation of survivors and what they accomplished for granted. We have to contextualize it for our children. A few months ago, my parents, after living close to 40 years in Kew Garden Hills, Queens, decided that they were going to downsize and they were going to move to an apartment. Initially, my parents told us that they did not need help from their five children to pack up. But it was like 1 week before the movers were about to come, and my father called me and said, "Listen, every time we go through a drawer, it takes us like an hour because we just look at everything. We've only done a half a room in the past 6 months. We could use your help." And so the children and the grandchildren came over. It was my responsibility with my children to go through the svarim. We created three groups of svarim. The svarim, the books that we would allow my father to keep, the books in which none of us wanted, and the books that were so good that my brother and I decided we should keep them and no longer my father. And in the books that we no longer wanted to keep was this old book. And as I was about to discard this book, for some reason I took a moment and I opened the book. And inside this book, I realized that in the front cover of the book, it says the following: printed by the Vad Hatzalah, printed by the American Joint Distribution Committee, in Munich, Germany, 1947. I showed this to my father, and he said that this Mesilat Yesharim, a text from the medieval Middle Ages, one of the most important texts that speak about Jewish spirituality and Jewish focus and purpose. From this text, he and many survivors would study as they lived in the displaced person camps in Germany. And if you could just run your hands up and down the covers, and for a moment realize who else, prior to me doing this, touched this book. If this book could talk, it would speak volumes. But the first words of this Sefer is the following. Yesod HaChassidut, the essence of piety, v'shoresh ha'avodah, and the centrality of our service to God, is sheitbarar v'yitameit eitzel adam ma chovato v'olamo, is that people should understand their responsibilities in this world. The first statement from this book, which remains from the Shoah, reminds us that we have to understand what our purpose is, what our goal is, if we're going to guarantee the continuity of the message of the Shoah. We have to enable our children to hear the voices of God, to hear the messages of the Shoah, and to realize that the survivors can empower us to calibrate our spiritual compasses. That the institutions that were built by survivors have to be creative and flexible enough that this new generation, what I call the I generation, that has grown up with iPods and iPhones and iPads, where the trendiest game is the Wii, spelled with two I's. This generation has to understand that there is a language of engagement, language of responsibility. And if the Nazis will not have a posthumous victory, God forbid, it will only be if we teach our children the need for them to be committed to the physical and the spiritual well-being of our people and of our society. If we teach our children how to hear the voice that Rabbi Yossi heard as he walked into the ruin. Our institutions must find a way to ensure that our children just don't know the story of what it means to be part of the Jewish people. It's not enough to know it. They have to own the story. They have to make it part of who they are. And we thank the community of Los Angeles for teaching the rest of the North American Jewish community this ideal. For you have represented the ideal of what it means to guarantee the future of the Jewish people. For what it means to guarantee Am Yisrael Chai. But it must be our continued responsibility to realize that the way we commemorate those that have been lost to us is by making sure that the next generation, escorted by Elijah the prophet, or escorted by his equals, the survivors that are still part of us, are able to hear the voice of God and to internalize those messages in the way they bring up their families and engage within society. Thank you very much. Rabbi Brander, for the inspiring words. Before concluding with the memorial prayer by Chazan Baram, at this point, I would like to actually reflect on the 15 years that I've been chairman of this program. There have been several people that have helped me all through the 15 years. Thank God my parents are still here, and they have helped. Mr. and Mrs. Chappelle have helped. But there's been Rabbi Mendel, who's been there all along, and I want to acknowledge. First off,
because unfortunately the LA community will not have him next year, but we wish him all the success. At this point, Hassan Baran, please. I'd like to thank everyone for attending this program. We will conclude with Maariv. We ask all the men to come to the front to daven Maariv, and if everyone else can please exit the sanctuary, we'd appreciate it so we can have a little bit of quiet for Maariv. Thank you very much. We appreciate everybody attending.
For the Shira. This is Karabah, the Rabbah. Amen. Oh my God.
Yeah. Good indeed.